Well, Celeste, it's very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you for coming on. And then just try to keep the mic just not more than 2 fists away. So, and then it'll move if you need to bring it out at all.
Okay.
Then, yeah, it looks good here volume-wise. So,
okay.
We're good to go.
Yay.
So you are a sexual and spiritual mentor. Is that what you said on the phone?
Yeah.
That...
It ranges from sexual to spiritual for sure.
What does that look like?
What it looks like is basically walking through the grassroots issues that people have and really getting in deep into what it is that is challenging them or creating cycles of behaviors in their life that are not good for them.
Not good for them?
Not good for them. Not healthy. Yeah. Not healthy. You know, we all get into these rhythms and flows that, you know, take us into a negative space, maybe not into a healthy space. So what I do is with their consent, I would say, we examine the root cause of what it is that's going on and, empower them, give them tools, practical tools to change the environment and change the cycle of behavior and change maybe even the perception of it, how they think about it, give them another way to look at whatever it is that's that they're facing in their life, from anything from sexual experiences to not knowing their purpose in life. And that would be what I would consider the spiritual.
Do you have, is there like a specific doctrine that you look at all when you're going into spiritual health with them? Or is
not at all. It's an overlay. It's 100% what it is that they believe in. And I use really practical examples of what they can do or how they can look at it from their own religious perspective or spiritual perspective, but it's practical. It's things like, are you breathing? Are you breathing deeply? Are you breathing in a relaxed way?
Yeah. This stuff is very, very fascinating. I took a religious studies class in university. It was one of my last classes, and I haven't gone back into it yet recently, but I've been meaning to do a lot of reading because it just fascinates me. So,
Yeah, there's a huge overlay of sexuality and spirituality. It's surprising, but it's the two different areas of our life that we have probably the most challenges and the most profanities, like the most tainted ways of looking at it that has been sort of indoctrinated into us or through our experiences or through our parents.
Is there anything that is the most common in terms of people's health being tainted? Is there anything that
in which regard? In the sexuality or the spirituality or the
in both, I guess, just whatever it would be. Is there anything that you get people coming to you about more than anything else, like specifically?
The word that gets used often is clarity. I need some clarity. You know, there's confusion here and I don't know what to do or I don't know which choice to make or I don't know how to improve my circumstances. And oftentimes we complicate it. We get it. We want to think that we have to do 17 things to get the small change. And really we don't. If we take very small steps, each one of those very small steps is significant. And we don't know that until after we've come through whatever transition and we look back and we go, wow. But we often try to make it bigger than it actually is in terms of what creates change.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think the baby steps are... They were incredibly important for me in school. Just taking a whole month of assignments and due dates and just looking at them and being like, okay, we need to do this right now and then we can move on to the next thing, right?
So, yeah, it is a step-by-step process, for sure.
So What led you to this profession? Did you always think you were going to do this, or was it kind of a stroke of fate?
No, I didn't. Growing up, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be all of these things. And I have capacities that lead me down that road, but I'm also a sexual abuse survivor. And so I had these really profound feelings of, that's not how it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And there's a better way. And I want to find the better way. And it wasn't about looking back on what happened and making that a part of my existence. It was looking back on what happened and looking for methods to improve the situation. And so I remember as a young girl going to the library and checking out anatomy and physiology books and bringing them home. And my mom was very open and supportive. And I'd have bookmarks on the male anatomy and the female anatomy. And I was like maybe 12. Yeah. You know, they let me take it out of the library and take it home. And all she did was ask me the questions that led me to, for me to ask more questions, right. You know, so Celeste, what are you checking out here? Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that you're interested in? Mm-hmm. And I just really wanted to learn the function of it, first of all. And that study, and I did go on to take more levels of anatomy and physiology, but that study of how to change the sexual environment or the judgment more so of what happened, it actually led me to sacred sexuality. And from sacred sexuality, then I started getting into sort of religious parameters and different spiritual systems that either completely disconnected from sexuality or it was overlaid, like the Vedic system, Ayurveda and the Vedic system. So I really started searching what sacred sexuality meant, and therefore sexuality and spirituality became just a big, you know, collage almost of information that I was trying to overlay and map. I wanted to find the common truth in it all. It didn't matter to me what the differences were. I wanted to see where all the systems had this this common thing that everybody could go, oh yeah, well, yeah, we all like this.
Where it all agrees.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about sacred sexuality?
Sure. Sacred sexuality to me might mean a little bit different to some other people out there in the world, but for me it's just a marriage between our physical and our emotional and our intellectual and our spiritual, and bringing it all together in a way that honors intimacy and honors connection. And sacred sexuality to me does not necessarily mean that there's prayer involved. It means that the people involved, whether they're solo or partnered in some form or fashion, that they were connecting with breath and that they were connecting with common goals and interests and you know, positions or postures in life, and you know, what did it mean to actually gaze or look at your lover when you're like deeply, like with time and with expression and with trust and vulnerability. Like these are all aspects to me of sacred sexuality, is being able to bring in the union of the opposites instead of looking at the differences in a way that creates separation, changing the profane to the profound, so to speak. That's sacred sexuality to me.
The profane to the profound, you said? So what do you mean?
We all have judgments about things. You know, we have, we'll look at something and we'll see the negative in it. And there is two sides to that situation. And our knee-jerk reaction is often to the negative. And it's a very conscious point of choice to transform a negative experience into a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean by that. We have the power to change the profane aspects that have happened to us or could happen to us into something that profoundly changes our inner climate or mm-hmm. our viewpoint on the world, really. It's a practice. It's mm-hmm. there's lots of subtle ways to teach people how to do that without having an actual incident. It's just mm-hmm. like learning how to direct your breath. If you can learn how to direct your breath in your body, and that might not make exact sense right now, but
I think I know what you mean.
You know, for me, I do an exercise where I ask them to inhale cool into the top of their head and exhale warm out their mm. feet or out their root or where they're sitting. And it's a brain exercise that actually requires them to take an imaginary something
mm-hmm.
and move it somewhere else. And mm-hmm. that's transformation. That's an active yeah. practice of changing something from this to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the act of changing profane to profound.
Okay. You talked about being a sexual abuse survivor mm-hmm. and just knowing that it wasn't supposed to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Was that immediate right afterwards, knowing that you needed to make this profane experience a profound one?
I think when I was mature enough to understand that this wasn't the way it was supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
It was a pretty definitive choice of I'm going to move forward in a different way.
Mm-hmm. In a different way.
I'm not going to let the negative thoughts, words, or ideas surrounding this
mm-hmm.
Keep me there.
Mm-hmm.
There's ways of looking at this in a way that empowers everybody, the perpetrator and the receiver of the mm-hmm. perpetration.
And out of that, it seems like you decided that you wanted to help everybody else as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's lots of people out there helping sexual abuse survivors through, and some have experienced it and some haven't. I just really felt that I had this level of understanding that I have no negative feelings towards it. So mm-hmm. it enabled me to tell stories or to share experiences or ideas or learnings from a perspective of no pain, of just learning and of acceptance. Mm-hmm. And when you're in that space and you see somebody who's come through it and come to a space of understanding or peace with it,
mm-hmm.
That in itself is empowering because you can see that there is a way through.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that would be, is that one of the most difficult tasks with mentorees, is just kind of trying to help them see things that are negative in a different light? I know for myself, I'm always trying to work on it, but sometimes when you're looking at a thought like that, and I'm sure you understand this, it doesn't seem like it can be changed. A lot of the times a negative thought looks like that is the only nature of it, that there's nothing malleable about it.
It's permanent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would consider that my most difficult aspect. It's the whole purpose.
Right.
And I really love working through that process with people. Mm-hmm. And I'm tough. Like, I call people out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I hear somebody lying to themselves about how difficult it is or how I have a pretty direct and a pretty practical approach to saying, well, that's bullshit. You know, like,
yeah.
Obviously, I don't always, you know, with some of my clients, they definitely know me well enough to appreciate that very, very direct approach. Not all of them mm-hmm. do I approach in that way because they're just not hardwired that way. But mm-hmm. Again, all of these processes are, they're simple methods through. So the the way I mentor is really, I just ask them enough questions that they come to their own answers. Mm-hmm. And if they're, you know, missing the left turn where they're going to find the answer, we'll back up and we'll give them about, you know, 10 or 20 or infinite number of approaches to that, mm-hmm. that turn off that takes them there. Every once in a while, I'll give them the direct approach, you know, I'll say, hey, you know, just try X, Y, Z and do it as an experiment and then let me know what happens, you know, and then, something happens.
What does something look like? I bet it's pretty abstract, but
they're all real practical things. Like, I quite honestly, they're the spiritual aspects. I don't ask people to go and do spiritual stuff. I ask them to go do practical stuff and they find their spiritual in it. I don't know what their spiritual is. So I can't say, here, do this spiritual thing.
Right. Yeah.
And it'll have meaning to you because it probably doesn't. Mm. But I can say, hey, do this practical thing. And while you're doing this practical thing, just listen to the wind a little bit. Mm. You know, it might not mean anything to you, but pay attention to the, you know, the bird that flew by. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you? Or any smells that come, like what does that, how does it affect you? What happens inside your body when you do this, this, and this? Mm-hmm. So the way I mentor is really giving them the opportunity to experience something that leads them to their own conclusion.
So I was, when I was looking at your website, trying to do a little bit of research, so I wasn't completely unprepared.
Sure.
The one, I can't remember if it was on the front page or where it was, but the quote, creative sexual energy generated without purpose becomes anxiety, fear, and stress, channeled greatly becomes a manifestation. Mm-hmm. I wanted you to explain it to me.
Sure.
I kind of had my own idea of what it looked like, but I wanted to hear from
you. Sure. So that is it's a foundation of Tantra, or union of the opposites, or again, sacred union. And there are steps and actualizations to energy, not just sexual energy, not just sexual experience, but energy itself. And once we become, first of all, aware that there is such a thing as energy running through the body, whether it's, you know, the nervous system. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, they're like little detectors within the body that signal whether we're in optimal running mode, whether we're depleted, whether we're high energy, you know, pushes and pulls, I like to call them, hot and cold. And so once you understand and you have the perception of energy and you can start to conserve energy or expend energy at your own free will, it comes to a point where you become a master of that energy. And with the mastery of energy and with proper intention comes where you can direct the energy into purpose, or what I call channeling it. The channelization of energy is what brings miracles about, or brings unlimited potential, because we're working with something beyond ourselves. It's not just me picking up a glass of water and putting it to my mouth. It's my thoughts about, you know, the water. It's how I receive it. Do I just drink it, or am I savoring it? Am I feeling it infuse, you know, the hydration in my body? Am I taking the time to be with each moment? And so creative sexual energy, if you just willy-nilly it and you expend it here and you use it there, we're not attaining purposeful goals. And in that, the body, that creating anxiety, the body wants to achieve. It wants to have an end goal. It wants to be to the next step. So yeah, without the proper intent, without the proper focus, without the proper direction, anxiety, fear, confusion, all of these things can come forward. Mm-hmm. But when we channel it with purpose and intention, we can manifest just about anything we want.
Just about anything. Is there any parameters or...
Well, I mean, truly the answer is no, but I want to say yes, because I want to say, you know, if you're using with ethics and with proper intent,
right.
You know, you're going to have all of these. And if you're not, you're going to have manifestation of greed or mm-hmm. other things. So yes, anything you want. But the caveat is, be careful what you're asking for, of wishing course. For, because it there's repercussions. Mm. There's, you know.
Is the concept of this energy, is it controversial at all? Do you find
that? I did find that. Yeah. I say it in past tense because I've come to a place in my way of explaining that can be quite scientific or plain. It's just your nervous system. Mm. Like, just let's just think of it like that. Or it's just like the energy coming from a satellite to your cell phone. There's messages, there's communication.
Right.
It's an invisible line of energy. You can interpret that.
Mm-hmm.
And so energy is the same exact thing. Either it's an invisible, you can interpret it, you can you know, utilize it for specific purposes. Yeah.
Would you liken it to like the Tao, or are they different, or one of the same?
Well, the same kind of inner peace or balance is part of the Tao.
Mm.
You know, so that's exactly what I'm bringing to the table. I'm wanting to balance emotionally, physically, intellectually, and spiritually. And what that looks like to each person is very different.
Mm-hmm.
We have the same kind of common threads. Again, like beginning at the beginning, I'm looking for the common threads of truth that overlie each one of these systems, or each person's belief systems, or each culture even.
Are there any key tenets that you found looking for that truth? Like just that... seem to be there always, or just always important to every person when it comes to sexual and spiritual health?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how to answer that one. You know, it's the common threads of truth, dignity, ethics, clear communication. Like, these are all... what everybody needs. They need safety, they need connection, they need inner strength, and they need boundaries, and they need, you know, both a space of will and surrender, and they need, you know, this heart opening, and they need to be able to communicate, and they need to be able to listen, and they need to be able to intellectually figure all of this out, but they also need to be able to be creative in their way of thinking, that thinks beyond the practical 1-2-3 step process, and they need to have something in some kind of faith in something outside of themselves. You know, we are not here alone on this earth, and faith doesn't have to mean, you know, trust in a deity. It's just simply trust in something beyond ourselves.
Something beyond ourselves.
Could be trust in your son or your dog or your, you know, just having faith in something outside of ourselves that is there for our well-being.
I noticed that you practice yoga as well. Is that tie in directly, or is that just a side hobby? Or
it does tie in directly. Yoga, the foundations of yoga are what needs to be practiced in order to take it to the next level of connection with sexuality. And because the yoga, you know, breath, if you can connect with another person with your breath, breathing together, asanas or postures, like what positions you stand for in life, you know, yantras, you know, the visual representations of what you surround yourself with. Mantras, what kind of words do you use? Mudras, like how do you use your hands? How do you gift to people? Bandhas, locks, where are your boundaries? And how do you hold and contain your energy? These are all aspects of yoga that are directly overlaid on life experience. And it's the reasons why those paths or those parts of yoga are taught. Is it's a life navigation system.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I wish I practiced it more. I shouldn't say I wish I did, because I'm working on it, but I'd like to be a little bit more involved in those practices and just kind of intertwine them in my life a little bit. You say mudras, did you say that was
mudras?
That's like hand gestures.
They're like the you see, you know, the Buddha, right? Sitting with his, you know, his fingers touching in this pose or the prayer, and what they're doing is they're completing energetic circuits within the body that create a certain flow, and each mudra represents or works with a different flow of energy or circuit of energy in the body.
So your mentoring probably leads much more deeply into other areas outside of this as well, like it outside sure of sexuality does. And spirituality. Yeah. Do you mentor in any other areas formally or?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been in business. I've owned Positive Passions since 2005. And then before that, my first business was pickled eggs when I was 12.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like I've been awesome. An entrepreneur for as long as I can remember. Great. as far back as my parents let me, kind of thing. So I do business mentoring. You know, I've been a sole owner for a long time, and I've seen the pitfalls of what business success looks like. And it doesn't always look like success.
Yeah.
So that's also a passion of mine, is to bring people into their definition of success, in the business world as well.
Do you find everyone's individual definition of success ends up being pretty similar, or is it pretty wildly varied?
I think we could almost say there's two different sides of that coin. Success is either money or something else.
Right.
For people. And quite frankly, I don't usually work with clients that want money success. That'll come with a perception of success in all the other areas that are, you know, life work, like work play balance. You know, if you can work play balance, that's success. If you can maintain a family life, a loving family life, and you know, be an entrepreneur, that's success. You know, these are things that I try to help them see, so that when they have their bad money year, that they don't think they're a failure.
Right.
Either you're not a failure, you just had a bad money year.
Yeah. Well, I imagine it probably makes it much easier to work with those clients as well, making that distinction, like knowing like we're not really working on this. And there's tons of business advisors that will show you how to just get the money, right?
Exactly. So. Exactly. And I do refer. I do have a ton of resources that I trust and that I send people to if they're not on the same wavelength as I am.
Did it take you a long time to figure out your work play balance?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was a single mom for just about my son's whole life. He's going to be 27 right away here. And yeah, it was really difficult. He didn't see a lot of me. And playtime, what was playtime? There was no such thing as play when you got to be mom and dad and you're running a couple businesses. And
it's a pretty common theme.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, no shame. He's amazing. And he sees the whole path of it, but, No, I did not have work-play. I have work-play balance now. Mm-hmm. But also I don't have a child at home anymore. Like I have space and time to find work-play balance. And, right. And that's one of the things that I help people with when I'm mentoring, is to find the space. You know, how do you create, like I had to specifically create that time for myself, and I had to stop saying that, you know, busy was good, and that it's okay to just not achieve.
Yeah. What does it look like coming into play from work? Like, is it easy to just turn it off, or do you have to kind of, is there a buffer period that you
I have specific steps that I take when I shut off from work, especially with the work I do, because I hear a lot of trauma and tragedy, and I hear a lot of people's deepest, darkest. Mm-hmm. And because I know what trauma-informed work is, and I don't want to take on their stuff. I got my own stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I have some very specific things that trigger my brain to turn it off. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when my hand touches the doorknob, to leave the space, the click of the doorknob is like, okay, turn it off. Yeah. This is, you're no longer working, because I work out of my home. You're no longer working. You, when you leave your office at home, you're home.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then my watercolor paints come out, my clay comes out, and whatever else I want to do for my pleasure, pure pleasure.
That's really good. I imagine it's so important to be able to flip that switch. And I work for my dad in the financial services industry. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple times when I was starting for him, I asked if I could work remotely. And the answer was no, thankfully. Because if I would have been able to work from home, I don't think I would have ever stopped working.
So, right. Yeah. It's really hard. And I've noticed that even, like, I'll be, you know, laying in bed with my computer, you know, watching a movie, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I forgot this email. And I'm like, no, like, you can do that tomorrow morning when your workday starts instead of...
When you enjoy it too, like, it's not like you're not like, oh, I'm going to miss this deadline, or oh, shoot, I didn't do this. It's like you're thinking about it because you want to keep doing it.
It's
right?
True.
So I feel like it's so hard sometimes
to turn it off. When I was building, I don't know which one of my websites, I was literally like in, I'd wake up and I'd grab my computer and I'd start doing it again. Not even out of bed, no coffee, no nothing, just at it. But that's passion, you know, like, and so maybe that's play in that moment, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that is play.
Yeah, this never occurred to me, actually, to be honest with you, that there could be an overlap sometimes. Because you think about people enjoying their work a lot, and people always say, how does that go? If you enjoy what you'll do, you'll never work a day in your life.
It's true.
But so I guess it could be play at the same time.
I think so. I think if you do... And I do. I really do enjoy what, like, even the most difficult aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hearing the traumas and tragedies and working through that with people, and, you know, having gone through a lot of what I'm mentoring about, you know, really understanding the depths of the effort that it's going to take them. So,
yeah. So another thing stood out to me on your website that I can't remember if it was a promotion you were putting on or what it was, but I noticed that I'm going to explain this wrong, so I'm going to try and not go into too much detail about it, but it was something, I can't remember the title you used, but it was when you were taking on someone to mentor, it looked like it was a year-long process right from the hop. Is that...
Yeah, I do. I've got several mentorship containers. I have a year-long intuitive mentorship development process that teaches them a very specific program to teach. Mm. And because it is developing intuitive processes, I take an entire year with them, and it goes really in-depth, and I take them for a week-long intensive. I'm not sure where it's going to be this year. It might be Belize again, but I've traditionally taken them to Belize or Costa Rica or Mexico, into the jungle, out of their comfort zones of all kinds, all out of all their safety nets, and you know, just sort of really had them face their not only their fears but their strengths. And I love that year-long process. It is it's deeply transformative, and it really powerful. And then some of the other mentorship containers are slightly less time. I do a 13 session and 26 session every 2 weeks. So it's either 6 months or a year. And I don't, the reason why I say 13 session is I don't want to limit 6 months. I want to do the number of the sessions, however long it takes them at their speed, you know, and those as well, when I work in longer containers like that, there is the accountability that they're requiring. I do a one-off life balance intuitive read that is like a snapshot or a big toe dip in the pool that they're in right now. And essentially, you know, how can they swim and get out of that pool kind of thing. And there's no follow up with that. There's no they're on their own to integrate. Of course, I'm there if they need me, but it's not me walking with them through all the understandings and the transformations. The mentorship process really allows them to have that beyond the self accountability, have the other accountability that, like, we miss stuff. We miss our own bull. You know, sometimes we can't see the cycle of crap that we're putting ourselves through. And that's the accountability. I'm like, can you see what's this cycle of crap that you got going on?
I totally agree. And it's so easy to get into habits that you don't really think are messing you up, but you look back and you're like, holy smokes, I can't believe I was doing that for that long.
And so the mentorship clients are, they're really looking to get to their end goal. Like, they're 100% committed, and they've probably tried several times, and they're just missing a step or a couple steps. And so that, I love that process, because it's all guided by them. And I'm just kind of there holding the container for them and adding a little question in here and a little exercise in there and a little bit of homework that's going to lead them, experiential homework that's going to lead them to, like, truly tasting what it is that I'm saying, instead of memorizing it and trying to repeat it.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest one. It's so easy to just absorb and recite information and just, like, know what to do. And I don't know, I just finished university. So it's like, I've had a really big dose of the boring, methods of that, and just reading textbooks and
memorization.
Right. But it's so much more interesting when you're one-on-one and when you're one-on-one and, listening to someone that actually is engaging you. I think that's the biggest part for me. And even not one-on-one, just with professors, that was one of the reasons why I decided to start doing this, was because where I learned the most was the classes where I didn't want to read the textbook. I just wanted to go to the lecture, because the lecture was amazing to listen to and just captivating and engaging, because you're absorbing it. You're not, you're not just taking notes that you're not going to read later. You leave it understanding what you were supposed to be taught, I guess.
Well, there's power in the story, you know. The storytellers of all kinds of tribes are some of the most important people, because it's the story is what helps people embody the experience and overlay their own, you know, flavor of how they've walked and come to their own conclusion. I love the experiential learning, because it's embodied. You know, when you ask somebody to go and sit in front of a fire and, you know, give them a series of tasks to actually do, their whole body is going to know it, not just their brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next time they come to that sort of environment, they've got this embodied experience that they can bring forward, and they're, yeah, it's really empowering.
Is that why you choose locations like Belize or Costa Rica? Or
absolutely. Yeah. Because the land does most of my work for me. it's amazing how it happens. But you take somebody to a waterfall and say, okay, we're all going to jump. You know, I don't really have to do much, but kind of be there to not catch them, but give them the safety of knowing that I'm going to be there with them. But yeah, it's all about what the land and the elements and nature and even the people that come in sort of interfere in the experience, whether it's a pleasurable interference or not, that's life. Like this is life experience.
Yeah, not everything's always going to be daisies and roses.
Right? No.
So especially jumping off a cliff. Some people will just go right off, and then others, and it's always, I find in situations like this, obviously I'm not a mentor, but just going to do something fun or crazy like that, it's really cool seeing the people that are the most worried about it or freaked out get the most excited afterwards.
Yeah, the tears and the joy and the celebration and the, oh my God, I just did that.
Just a release.
Yeah. And that's really where I get that's my fuel, you know, like, what I get paid is definitely not why I do this. Why I do this is absolutely seeing the tears of joy or the excitement or the, you know, the body vibrating in a way that, like, they're truly alive and experiencing that moment. That's everything for me.
Especially today. There's so many people just going through the motions. Well, I think that is all we have time for today.
Sure.
Or not all we have time for, but that was, this was great. And I loved hearing all of that from you. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Nathan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
That was fun.